Okay, friends, we here at the Lucky Few podcast are huge fans of Jonas Paul Eyewear for Kids. Why? So many reasons. One of my favorite is they deliver their home try-on kits straight to our door, which I'm going to share a little bit more about those later in the episode. They are super affordable, and they give my kiddo, sweet Mason Hope, the absolutely stylish glasses a girl can have, and she loves them. Visit jonaspauleyewear.com today and use promo code THELUCKYFEW to get 15% off your first order. Hey friends, welcome to the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Heather.
Mercedes.
And Micah.
And this season, we're going deep on what it means to own our own influence, to shout the worth of people with Down syndrome in the spaces that we're already in. And we are celebrating people in our community who are using their voices in their own spaces.
Today, we are introducing you to Micah May, a woman with an amazing first name, I have to say, who is the founder and CEO of May Designs, a multi-million dollar customizable notebook company, and mom to three kids, including nine-year-old Jackson, her oldest and only boy who has Down syndrome. Micah is a successful, passionate entrepreneur who's using her voice as a leading woman in her field to advocate for Jackson and people with Down syndrome. And we are so excited to talk with her about what it's looked like for her to start a business in the midst of having a newborn with an unexpected diagnosis. She did both at the same time. And to grow that company while juggling life with a child who has extra doctor's appointments and therapies.
Micah inspires us so much. So not only is she a woman, which we love, obviously, we're all women.
But and we love women.
We love women. We love men too, but that's another podcast. So, but she does it all, right? I've known this woman for a little while. She's become a dear friend. She literally does it all. She fiercely pursues her passions, which is amazing. And she does that in the midst of raising kids with Down syndrome. And so she knows what it's like to do both. And if anyone's going to inspire us today to shout the worth of our kids within our own spaces and in our own sphere of influence, yep, it is Micah May. So friends, welcome to the Lucky Few podcast. I discovered May Design way too late in life, and the first time I was making journals, it blew my mind. And so we need to say that May Design is a one-stop shop for all things personalized and the place. So stationery, notebooks, tumblers, bags, and Micah's always coming out with new stuff. She is a creative designer, thinker, imaginative person. They're online, May Design, which we're going to give you all the links for in the show notes, and at Target. Holla.
What?
At Target.
Amazing.
So I need to confess something. Okay.
Okay.
I love journals. I started writing in a journal when I was in ninth grade, and it's a very dramatic journal, that one. I have piles and piles of them. And I never really valued having beautiful journals. I think I sort of have always tried to be practical or something, but I am married to this man who is my husband.
Perfect. Thank you for clarifying.
He is like a lover of beauty, I have to say. It's like a very, he's brought a lot of things into my life, helped me see some things. And one of those things is that I just never, in before knowing him, like appreciated good design. And he is, you know, he's into fashion, he's into like beautiful food and cozy lighting, and so we've been trying to have family meetings and make family values. We've decided on our family values, and so one of our family values is celebrating beauty.
I love it.
And so I've been thinking about this because I feel like my kids are really good at celebrating beauty. I'm kind of the last one besides like poetry and stuff, but like visual beauty. So I've decided that I need to surround myself in small ways with beautiful things, and that even my notebooks need to be more beautiful. So I'm making a commitment this May to start buying more beautiful notebooks and not just the plain, like, one color cover stuff.
Yes.
So I'm glad that Mike is here to help me get more inspired in this pursuing beauty thing.
Yes, because if you're going to buy a beautiful notebook, then you're going to have to buy it from May Design.
That's exactly right.
Also, this episode is not sponsored by May Design. We genuinely adore these products. As I'm listening to us talk about it, I'm like, wait a second. No. These products are so great. And something I love about Mica is it's not just her designs. About Mica May. Mica Boyette, I love you too.
Oh, thanks.
This will be a confusing episode. I'll have to clarify a few times. But she inserts beauty into all her spaces. So if you follow her on Instagram, which you should, you can follow May Design and you can follow Mica May. Then it's like her doorways are beautiful. Her nails are beautiful. There's like such a unique passion for beauty that she puts into all her spaces. Her words are beautiful. And she helps us see that there's beauty all around us.
I love it. And that totally leads us into our theme this season. As shouters of worth and narrative shifters, it's our job to help the world see the beauty we see.
Mm-hmm.
That's deep, you guys. We are just like going from notebooks into like beauty in the people around us.
If we can't see how to take nail color and shift that into narrative shifting, right? Like if your nail color can help you shift the narrative, which is what we're getting at here, then let's do it. Right?
That's what this is all about. Nail color to narrative shifting.
That's right.
So let's bring her on, you guys. Mica May, entrepreneur, CEO of May Designs, and narrative shifter teaching the world to see beauty in design and in the lives of our kids with Down syndrome. Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast, Mica May.
Mica!
Yay! You guys, I'm so honored and thrilled to be with you today.
Yay. We're so happy you're here, Mica. Like I said earlier, Mica and I met maybe about a year and a half ago, but we're introduced to each other online before that. And I cannot say enough good things about this woman. As a business person, as a mom, as a friend, she is one of the best, maybe the best. So love you, girl. Love you. We're so thankful you're here.
Celebrity, when I first walked in, I'm like, there she is. I wonder if we can actually be friends IRL. Yes, totally are.
I know.
So Heather, it's been so fun to get to know you in real life and share the love of Torchies with you when you're here in Austin.
Oh,
all the good stuff.
I'm sorry to go off here, guys, but have you guys eaten at Torchies?
It's no. Unbelievable. It's
I don't know about Torchies.
Tell us, Mica. Tell the world what they're missing out on.
I mean, I think they have one of their tacos. So they're famous for crazy tacos, right?
Yes.
So Austin, there's all kinds of Tex-Mex. I have them all labeled. There's fresh Mex. There's dirty Mex. There's, you know, that's like the junk that makes you feel really bad, but it's so good.
Yes.
Like that dirty Tex. But this is just straight up Austin Tex. So they're famous for their tacos, and they've got one like the trashy trailer, and it's covered in queso, and it's just delicious. It's like chicken fried tenders with queso wrapped in a taco.
Yep,
how can you not love that?
There's like fried avocado.
It's just
my gosh,
so good.
Yes. And they have adult beverages for super cheap. Coming from California to that restaurant, I'm like, literally, it would be twice as much. Everything on the menu would cost twice as much. And as a frugal person, that's exciting for me at Torchies.
That's really
what
special.
Were you gonna say, Mike?
We lived in Austin for a year. If only I'd known Mica May then. We lived there 7 years ago. And I went to Torchies all the time. And when we left, we had friends give us coasters that were just like black and white cool photos of Austin. And we use them all the time. And we have one that's just a photo of Torchies tacos.
Yes.
My kids just realized the other day that it says, because their tagline is dang good tacos, but I don't think we're allowed to say the actual word on this podcast. My kids just realized that it had the D word on it the other day.
Oh, shoot.
They were like carrying it around. Look, Mom!
Oh my gosh. I literally think, I'm not joking, I think about them weekly Like, where can I, how do I eat that taco again? And
how can I ship them warm to you?
But also their queso, also their guacamole. And I thought, how do I start this in California?
Totally.
So Torchies, if you're listening, I would like to open one up. I mean, I'd like to put my name on the contract. I'm not doing any other work. Okay.
Maybe we should get Torchies to sponsor this episode.
I would like to own a Torchies for the free tacos and to make some money, but I'm not doing the work. Okay, we've digressed majorly. Micah, I'm bringing it back in. We're going to talk to you about a lot of things, but let's start with your story. So you have three kids. Your oldest has Down syndrome. Tell us your story, and we'll ask questions along the way. But let us know a little about your family, about Jackson, how he came to be in your life, all those things.
Okay. So, husband and I got married. Waited about 3 years to start thinking of having babies, and then got pregnant, had a pretty lovely pregnancy, and then basically we didn't ever think anything was different in all of the doctor's appointments and everything. So we, when we went in to have Jackson, there were some complications along the way. Like, I started bleeding and then ended up having an emergency C-section. And so that's just a scary, traumatic thing when, you know, you don't know what it's going to look like anyway. And so I think all the expectations of a birth or what you've imagined it to be or the stories you've heard or friends, whatever, that just kind of all went out the window. And so I think already I was in a mental state of so tired. It had been, you know, like 40 hours or something since I'd slept or eaten. And here I had this emergency C-section. And so, everything seemed fine. Like, showed us Jackson. And I had this beautiful moment. It's one of my favorite memories of his birth where, you know, they kind of wrap him all up and bring him over to me. And just the first time I set eyes on Jackson, I just, you know, and I'm still just laying there on the table. And I just said, Jackson. And I said his name and he opened up his eyes and just searched and locked eyes with me. Aww. And that is just a moment I'll never, ever, ever forget because, he had just, you know, he's crying and it's kind of like, oh, what, welcome to the world, dude. Yeah. It's a scary place out here. You were warm and cozy a minute ago and here we are. And I said his name and he found me and locked eyes with me.
Oh my God.
The most beautiful moment. So at that time, I didn't even think that there was anything different. And so we went a good like 8 or 10 hours before someone came in and kind of just popped in and just said, hey, I'm the pediatrician on call and everything's looking good. We checked Jackson out and wanted to let you know there's about a 50-50 chance that he's got trisomy 21. So we're going to run some tests and I'll see you tomorrow.
Whoa. And you're like, okay,
like, hold on, wake up for a second.
Yeah. You know, can you give me a moment? Like,
are you bringing food? Like, who are you? So literally it was just a doctor. She was on her way out. She had a purse on her shoulder and in normal clothes, like did not ever even come close to me or sit down and talk about what that would mean. And so she walked away and my husband and I just stunned in the hospital room going, did you hear what I just heard? Cause I heard that maybe Jackson has Down syndrome, but they don't even know. And like, what are we supposed to do all night? Like it's 6 PM and no one is here. And what just happened to us? So that was kind of our story of kind of like how we found out about Jackson.
So with that, tell us about when you actually did get the diagnosis. And then Jackson has something called translocation, which is a super rare form of Down syndrome that not a lot of people are aware of. Not a lot of people realize that there is more than one form of Down syndrome, but translocation, it only happens in 4% of cases. So can you tell us a little bit about when you actually got the diagnosis, when you found out that's the kind of Down syndrome Jackson had, and maybe even fill us in a little bit about what that means?
Yeah. So, we basically spent the next couple of days, my sweet OB came in the next morning and literally crawled in my hospital bed with me. Oh. She was absolutely lovely. And she just cried with me and just said, I don't know. There's enough signs. You know, I've taken a look at Jackson. There's enough signs, and named off all the things that, you know, you are, were giving them signs and said, we're going to have to run natural blood tests. And so basically we went home, spent the next couple of days at the hospital and C-section, and then went home without a actual diagnosis. We kind of were like, I guess we'll wait until the blood results come back in. So, which was an interesting time to kind of like, what, how do we communicate that to the world? You know, is it like, hey, like pray for us, he might have Down syndrome, or it just was a funny spot to be in. So we just kind of laid low and just loved him. I mean, we just loved on him like a typical newborn, brought him home and all the things, right? Set up his nursery and figured it all out. And so about 5 days later, we got a call from a doctor that had, we had taken him in. Basically, my OB had said, here's the doctor you're going to want. If, you know, if he does have Down syndrome, this guy is amazing. And so we took him in like the first day I got home, and then he called, rushed everything through all the results and called, and he just said, hey, got all the results for you. You know, can you grab your husband on speakerphone? And so we were just on the phone. He had called us and said, so results came back in. Jackson does have trisomy 21. He said, but there were some interesting other data that came in, and his trisomy 21 is a result of something called a Robertsonian translocation. So what that means is essentially, you know, in your DNA lineup, basically some, I think it's 14. I am also not a expert. Biologist.
Right.
Or whatever.
You make beautiful notebooks.
Specialist.
Right. Geneticist.
21. And so a little tiny piece of like extra genetic material latches onto 21, which effectively makes a third 21st chromosome. So, but that basically, he said, so there's a couple of different ways that happens. Sometimes it's a parent that is extra genetic material in their own DNA. And so that could mean that all future children have trisomy 21, because it's just going to keep happening with future kids. So I think that that was the hardest news, was kind of like just all those expectations that you think you have as a new mama and a parent in your life. When I just thought, okay, Jackson's got Down syndrome, like, well, let's figure out what our life is going to look like. And then to potentially have that narrative shift of just all kids would have Down syndrome and what that would mean for us. And would we want to, like, how could that world look like for us? So we spent about 6 months kind of doing some more testing to just figure out what the realities were. And they basically told us that about 6 months, you got a 25% chance of all future kids having Down syndrome. And so simultaneously, other people were saying the best thing you can do for Jackson, for his just cognitive, you know, growth and all of that, is to have another kid as fast as possible. Get him a sibling. However you get him a sibling, do it, because they'll probably help, you know, push him along. So, at about 7 months, we started trying to have another baby and got pregnant. And so Jackson and second sibling, Madeline, are 16 months apart, and just kind of have been going from there with, you know, what, maybe our other kids are going to have Down syndrome. We don't know. But that was a beautiful, lovely risk we were willing to take. So.
I love that.
Whoa.
That's beautiful.
Anyway. And they actually did tell us that Harper, my third, when we went in for the 20 week checkup, they were doing the sonogram. I could tell that I don't know what you call the sonogrammist specialist.
Yeah. The tech.
I can tell you every shade of pink and blush.
Oh my gosh. Like,
if it's a biological or scientific term, I do not know what I'm talking about.
Oh my gosh.
The sonogram lady.
Sonogramologist.
Got really quiet, and I could tell they were looking at the heart, and I was on the table, and I just said, why is it taking so long? And she said, like, I'm just going to be right back. Let me go talk to the doctors real quick. And she left the room, and my husband was there. And I just said, this baby has Down syndrome. I know it. I just know it. And, so she came back in, and she just said, hey, We've seen there's a pretty significant hole in this baby's heart. And so we're concerned and kind of did that. By then I'm checked out, right? My mental, I'm like, okay, been there, done that. I know what to do. And so they kind of like walked us over to the genetic specialist and I was like, hi, thanks. I've got one and love him. Hand me the pamphlet and I'm out. Like, just tell me what next step I need to do. So we went in for an, you know, EKG and pediatric cardiologist appointment, all that stuff. And she is perfect and doesn't, I mean, she does not have Down syndrome, which was, we just thought for the next 20 weeks that she did. Very interesting story. So,
that's amazing. So and you have a, Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I imagine then that after she was born, it was like the opposite sort of, of having the doctor come in and be like, actually, she doesn't have Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was a fascinating journey each birth, just because, the expectations, you guys, are not to be underestimated. Oh, and the ones that you don't even know that you've got. And so I had spent a lot of mental energy, thinking about, honestly, my middle child, Madeline, of how she's going to feel, you know, with an older and a younger sibling having Down syndrome, and just what that would feel like to be her, and kind of, and then it was like, well, and she doesn't. So, okay, there's that, you know? So it's just, you never know, and you cannot predict the future. And I think that is a space that we all live in together, that the future is unknown, and you can do the best you can to think and pray and prep, but we never know what the next hour holds. And so holding all those expectations so loosely is so important when we've got the kids that we've got. And
I think too, holding what the doctors say loosely too, you know, like what they can tell you. And I know you sit in it and you think about it and then ultimately be like, okay, you know, I don't know. I just feel like that's an interesting thing that happens repeatedly in our circle, in our community, is the things that they find off of the tech stuff that they go off of statistics they go off of. But they're not facts. They're just could be's and maybe. And that's confusing for parents.
I think technology is a beautiful, wonderful thing, and information is knowledge and power and all that good stuff. But I think that it's, you know, it cuts both ways. Yes. And I think sometimes we get to knowing too much too early, and it's not helpful at all. And it can be so much more scary than it needs to be. Because I believe that God is not done with those babies until they're out of the body. Right. And so does miraculous things, and they're, you know, it doesn't matter what happens when what you see it at XYZ appointment until you're holding that sweet baby and you know what you might be dealing with in terms of a disability or whatever it might be. You might not even know for years what is going on inside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it's so true. I know I talk to parents all the time who have kids who are older, Down syndrome or even other different abilities or even none, that it's like at birth we were told that we would be given this many days of life, or there would be this, you know, and or they wouldn't do this, or they could do this, and now they just defy all the odds. And it is such an interesting balance. Like, yes, you want to be educated, you want to be aware, you want medical professionals to give you that information, but at the same time to stamp and label a child as able or unable within their first breaths of life, it's like, come on guys, we can't do that.
Well, and even the task as a mom of just raising your kid with open hands, like I feel like that's my journey with Ace has been one learning moment after another of I can't control what like his development. I can't control what, who he becomes. And, you know, every 6 months when I do the blood test and have 1,000 things to be worried might show up. It's been such a spiritual practice for me of releasing not just Ace, but my other kids to God and to what the future holds that I can't control.
Yep.
Yeah. I've used this analogy before, and I think that what I felt like in those first couple weeks as I was given this diagnosis, same thing. The doctors tell you all these things within day one, right? I felt like I got this index card with a bunch of bullet points of things about my kid. And I'm just reading through all the potential, mostly negative things, right? Right. From their perspective. And I just thought, you know what? My mom didn't get the proverbial index card of things about Mohica May that she could potentially worry about for years, right? She didn't get a note card in the mail that just said, you know what? Like, Micah's going to really stink at math. She's not going to count her fingers for forever. She is not going to make the cheerleading squad. She's not going to X, Y, Z of whatever are going to be the things in my little lot in life. She didn't have those things to worry about ahead of time. And so I felt like I just mentally ripped that. I ripped that card up because I don't want a list either of potential obstacles. And so I'm going to erase them. And of course be smart about the things that I need to be aware of, but not have those limitations on a postcard, just like nailed up on my bulletin board. So
100%. And then, just a moment, Mohica.
Right?
It's my favorite ever. Micah.
Is that your first name or your maiden name?
My middle name is Marie. My name is Micah Marie Mohica May.
Yes! Oh, so
that's
many
amazing.
M's.
You should go find that.
The irony of the fact that I basically have a monogramming company is I have never monogrammed anything in my whole life because my initials are just That does not look awesome on a tote. Okay.
So, that looks sassy.
You can do like giant M's everywhere.
We are just putting an M on things, but I've never done like a multiple monogram because it looks not awesome. Just a bunch of M's. Anyway.
This is my favorite news ever. And I don't think I can just say Micah May anymore. I'm going to have to do the whole thing. The whole deal.
So good.
Beautiful. I love it.
Mohica designs could have been hard to Google, though.
Yeah, you know? 100%. So, I do like Micah May, but I like also knowing the Mohica part.
Yes.
Just tuck that in your
pocket.
Now
we all know. Tuck that in your back pocket. So wait, let's go there. Let's transition over to talking about Micah May and May Designs.
Yes.
And tell us here, is this a true statement that you were pregnant with Jackson when you were launching May Design?
Yep.
And you were very pregnant.
I was very pregnant.
So tell us all the things going on in your mind when you think I'm going to be very pregnant and launch a business.
So I had another business. I was a graphic and web designer. So I had Micah May Design, which was a kind of boutique-y graphic and web design firm. So I did anything from corporate identity, logos, which then, you know, again, maybe 15 years ago, there were not a lot of women designers that were in the professional space. And there wasn't a lot of forward thinking colors and more font treatments for corporate businesses. I know that sounds so crazy because we've come so far and we're so comfortable in that space now. But 15 years ago, I was in a space where most of my clients were corporate women that were not happy with the way their branding was, you know, attorney firms and all kinds of corporate insurance that were these women that wanted have a little bit more fun. And I was doing that business, accidentally basically started a notebook company because I love paper and pen and had started to print out weird covers for myself and different inside pages and was like ghetto stapling and round cornering them like scrapbook style. Started putting my logo on, taking those to my design meetings. And eventually people said, oh, as soon as you wrap up my logo, I want about, you know, 100 of those notebooks for my clients. So I just, as I was pregnant and was thinking about my time as a service, right? I wanted to go into the graphic design space so that I could, when I had babies, kind of ramp up or ramp down my hours as I could. And so the whole purpose of why I even went into this kind of design field was so I could orchestrate my own time. And so as I was getting more and more pregnant and realizing I'm like, can I take on the amount of physical work to do designs and et cetera? when the notebook started happening and I'm just doing normal math, I'm thinking, if I made a website and someone could purchase something at 2 a.m. and I'm not having to physically do it, that means possibly I can make money while I sleep, and that feels smart. Anyway, so yeah, I basically kind of launched a website and waddled around town and literally until he was born, like tried to show up my notebooks off of different people, and it started working. And so I had him and had about a 1.5-2 week span of time where I was running around to all these meetings for him and cardiologists and this and that and getting him all settled. But I was also had two businesses that I was trying to run. And I basically built Man Designs with Jackson, like asleep on me, which was such a beautiful space. And I was at home and, you know, ECI was coming almost every day and doing PT and OT and speech. And I was pushing my thumb on the top of his palate to make sure that there was room in there. Like my whole life was just conference calls and typing with him latched on to my boob or me pushing his palate to make sure that his tongue could stay in there, you know, whatever, whatever the thing. Like that is truly how I built the company from the get-go. It's just right there with Jackson. And he just was with me 24/7 and I would wear him to meetings. I'd bring him everywhere with me. And it was a really beautiful time.
That's so cool. I love that.
I heard you tell the story on Jess Lively's podcast, how you were just in that space, like running this tiny business with Jackson as a little guy. And then you had this opportunity to have your notebooks featured on Good Morning America. And I wasn't sure like what the timeline was for that. How old was Jackson when that happened?
Okay, so that was December of 2011. So he was born in 09. So he was like 2. Okay. So I had Madeline, I think was 1 and Jackson was 2.
Oh my gosh.
And
Madeline. So you had 2.
Had 2. Yep. So I had, Maddie and Jax. Business had kind of taken off by then. I was actually doing still both businesses. We had moved to Houston. Wow. So I was running Mike and May Design, which was providing for my family, the design stuff. And then I had May Books. So it was actually called May Books because that was the original name of the business. Was people just called, people just started calling me like, hey, can I get some of those May books that you've got? Like those books that you carry around. And so the company just kind of named itself. And so it was called May Books at the time and had an opportunity to go on Good Morning America. I wasn't even on. I didn't have any employees, no staff. I was just kind of putting any money that was made from May Books back in to kind of keep the website alive and send out samples, la, 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 la. Like it wasn't even really that profitable because I was putting every dollar I made back in. And Mike and May Design was providing for my family because my husband had just finished seminary. So I had been the sole breadwinner for our family for a couple of years prior.
Popping out babies.
That's right. As we do.
So.
Pushing up their palates.
In 10 years, I'm exhausted.
Totally.
Anyway, so yeah, got on Morning America. It was a crazy, crazy story.
Tell it real quick about like how she got on an airplane. You told me this story before. Just like a quick version of.
Okay, quick story is me, myself, and I, 6 a.m., I'm sitting in my office going, I wonder if this is really going to happen. So I had met this incredible woman who believes in women entrepreneurs and all that stuff. Her name is Tori Johnson. And she had just said, hey, can you produce thousands of these notebooks? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, can you do it in a couple of weeks? I'm like, yep. I just said yes to every question that she asked. And really, it was just me, myself, and I. So I had, you know, she's like, do you have a call center? I was like, yep. 1-800-457-BOOKS. Like,
oh
I don't
my
know.
Gosh. Oh my gosh.
And then I did it, right? Like, got on a dedicated server, set up a call center. I did all the things I needed to do just the next day.
Yeah.
Stayed up all night, did it all, and then literally was like, I guess this is going to happen, and prepped my team meaning me, my team. I gave production a heads up, which was me, and I gave the design team a heads up, which was me. But really, we did have a manufacturing facility to just make sure they could actually produce them. And so they were ready for a couple thousand orders. Anyway, we received, so I had this thing called Get Clicky, which is almost the first version of Google Analytics, because literally this was like 11 years ago. And so all of a sudden, the Eastern Seaboard just started, it would go ding when someone got on the site. ding when someone else would go, and it just goes ding, 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 and just the whole East Coast just lit up. Like all those people were on my website. Like there's a glitch. This can't really be happening. And I hit refresh, and I had 1,000 orders.
Oh my God.
Within 1 minute, like I hit refresh. I was like, I wonder if I got any orders yet. Let's see, 1,000 orders. And we had not even gone live yet.
Oh my goodness.
Online, so the people that knew that these deals were happening were ready and searching. And so I'm like, we've had 1,000 orders before I went live. We have like all the US to cover in every time zone. I just started to panic before it even happened. And anyway, it was a crazy story. We had 33,000 orders come in.
Girl. I got the chills. Oh my gosh. So
anyway, that was the day I quit my other job.
That was the day. I got to go.
Sorry, guys. I'm out.
So.
Oh my goodness. And then you like just had a moment. You had a moment where you talked to your husband and said, I got to go. Like, I got to get on a plane and go to where the manufacturing was being done, right?
And like, my kind of home office didn't really even have doors. Like, I was in the living room, dining room kind of place. Right. You know, it was like a 1,800 square foot home with me and the two babies at home every day. Jackson was actually at the Rice School in Houston. So he was being taken care of and had therapy and all that stuff every single day at the Rice School. So I had Madeline at home and was just, you know, doing normal business and life like we all do when she naps and whatever. And I thought, I'm not sure that's going to happen. So again, this was December 1st. And so that the segment was, and all of these people were needing their orders for Christmas holiday. Oh, so it's like teacher gifts. I had 25,000 emails.
Wow.
Oh my
in
gosh.
One day of it's literally
my nightmare.
I accidentally put the wrong shipping address, or like, I need to change my monogram, or can I write shipping? So like 25,000 actual emails of people. And so I after a couple of days of just thinking of how in the world I can actually make this happen, I hadn't slept. I was just closing my doors. Literally, friends were dropping off food. It was like I was in like a prison where they open up the door, hand me the food, and I shut it. And I'm like, bye, I'll see you in a month, you know? So I was just eating at my desk. I was sleeping at my desk. My sweet kids, I could see their fingers under the doors like, Mommy, are you in there? It was absolutely brutal. And so anyway, I was up one night, just so sheer exhaustion and like all of that. I was just absolutely miserably crying. It was 2 a.m. I woke my husband up because I was in hysterics. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this, babe. I've got thousands of dollars in my bank account from people who are believing in me. And I truly don't know how I can do it. Like, I don't know how I can do it. And he just looked at me and he said, babe, you were born for this moment. Oh. You've got this. There is no one else on the planet that can get this done except for you. I've got the kids. I will handle a Christmas tree and decorations and gifts. Go be there. Be with the manufacturing team. Show them how to stitch those notebooks. Do whatever you need to do. And he said, but first I'm going to make you a sandwich. Mm-hmm. He like put on a pot of coffee, made me a sandwich, and made sure that I like had water and food and literally some caffeine. And I booked a flight for 6 a.m. to Memphis. And so that's where my production facility was. I don't even remember. It was a blur. I literally didn't even pack a bag. I just was like, oh my gosh, there's a flight at 6. I left at 4. I ate a sandwich. I think I grabbed like a couple, like my toothbrush and my computer. Like that's all I cared about. It's like
fresh breath. And
I was gone for 2 days. I had 2 bike clothes when I got to Tennessee and a jacket. I live in Austin. It was like 80 degrees in December and I arrived and it was like 20. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even bring a jacket. You guys, I literally went to Walmart and like bought a couple of clothes and was at my printing facility by 7 a.m. And I just didn't leave until every single order had been shipped out. So
wow. Amazing.
Anyway, I don't recommend doing that.
Oh my gosh.
It's a lot of work, but you did it. You
know, work-life balance.
I don't know. There's no such thing as balance.
Whether it's business, you know, business or kid, rally.
You rally.
You have to get it done, right? Like, whether you've got a kid in the hospital, you get these superhuman strengths to fight and advocate, whether it's doctors coming in and you're saying, no, I need better care, or no, I need, you have to just take over and be, you know, be in charge. And so
Yeah. And as I've gotten to know you, I mean, hearing all of this, now that I know you, none of it's a surprise. Like, you are, I say you're Energizer Bunny. I don't know anyone with more energy than you have. And that's as a compliment. And you're super innovative and creative. And so it's not a surprise to me as your friend to know that you would launch a successful business while having tiny babies at home. But I think a lot of moms and baby with Down syndrome, I think a lot of us parents at home who are trying to figure out how to do both, right? Like how to have a successful business or a successful hobby or whatever it is that our passion is, mm-hmm. and raise kids and kids with Down syndrome. Talk to us about like how a little bit more, like a lot of mamas are beating themselves up about that. Like, how do you do that or not do that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I remember, so my mom was a single mom. I love both my parents. They're amazing. They've gotten along fantastic, but divorced when I was 7. So I feel really fortunate to have had both of them in my life. And it was actually really lovely. But predominantly my time was spent with my mom being a single mom. And I knew early on that she was not leaving me. She was doing what she needed to do to provide for her family. Mm-hmm. And so she used to always just say, and like, I'm not traumatized by her having gone to work. I was able to see that she was providing for us. And so we have had so many chats. My mom is amazing, of me just crying, like, I'm just going to quit May Designs, or I'm going to sell it, or I'm going to figure out what to do because I just only want to be with my babies. But I knew that the second that I did that, that I would find something else to do because that's how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. And so instead of pretend that I'm not wired that way or wish I was wired a different way, I just tried to come up with systems for sanity to kind of manage both worlds and both personalities. And so one of the things my mom always just said was, you know, Micah, your kids can feel when they're chosen. Mm-hmm. And when you are leaving them for, you know, because you don't, I don't know how to say it, but she basically just said, like, you always knew I chose you and I was needing to work to provide, or I was needing to work because I had gifts. She's an amazing piano player. Mm. So I went to sleep every single night with her playing these exactly the same 5 songs. Mm-hmm. And so I knew when she was all dressed up in her beautiful dress and she was going to a gig to do her piano, because that was how she was gifted and she was mm-hmm. sharing it with the world. And so I think that her leading me in an example of working and doing the things that she was gifted in helped me so much, because I do feel like I have gifts that I wanted to share. And so I think, and I can go through practical things, which I love tactical stuff, so I don't mind sharing a couple. Like, yes. Here is what I literally did is when
I was going to ask you that, to share how you make that, how you make those calls. What's your priority list?
Okay. So yeah. When it would get out of hand and it was either super unbalanced on one side, right? Like, oh my gosh, I'm stressed with work and it's summer and I've only been spending time with kids and I got to catch up, or vice versa, where it's like, oh my goodness, right? Things can get out of balance fast. And so I think one of my things my husband always says is just know what time it is. You have to know what time it is. Is it time to sprint? Is it time to do whatever? Like, you will innately trust your gut, or you need to trust your gut and know, you know what? My whichever kid is needing more time with me, I'm going to start doing one-on-one dates, or I'm going to go all in on bedtime, or do little things to tweak and build that relationship back up. And so that, like, knowing what time it is, when I can feel things are getting a little bit out of whack, like really adjusting ASAP and trying to make some little tiny tweaks. But another thing I did too was I literally made a list every single day, went Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, wrote down by hour everything that I did and that would need to happen for a Monday and for a Tuesday, right? So from waking up the kids to making lunches to getting their backpacks ready, dropping off at school, work, all the things, bedtimes. And then I wrote my name by the things that I wanted to do, right? So like, let's just say there were 50 things that needed to happen on a Monday and my name was by 30 of them. I literally would look at that list and say, okay, Jonathan, who's my husband, What on this list do you want to do? Not have to do, need to do, but like, what are you energized and excited by? And so we basically restructured a couple of little tiny things that I did or didn't want to do that he did, because we found that for me, a drop off in the morning for the kids was stressful on everybody. It was terrible for me because I would drop off Jackson. I would talk to everybody. And I would like be there until 11 a.m. because I will have just like that happened. But I also
all of a sudden you were volunteering in the
And then also it was extra traumatizing on me because I would drop them off in like the whole two-way mirror situation. I would just stand and like freak out about, is he thriving? And so I'd have all of these doubts that would come in, you know, like, oh, he's crying, he's not happy. And he would cry when I dropped him off, but not when my husband dropped him off, like all these things. And it was unnecessary. It was like fake stress and guilt that wasn't truly happening. And so Jackson was fine and happy and thriving. And so we just, I'm like fired from any sort of drop off scenario still. Like I can't
handle it.
I want to pick them up. I love to pick them up. How was your day? So excited. Like they're coming home to me. And I think that there was just something really magical. So again, I've done that with every little thing. Right. So,
awesome.
That has helped me a ton, to just really know like what are the little things that I can do from a practical standpoint to help that relationship with my kids and my relationship with work. I have one more story. Can I share one more?
Of course. Yeah.
So there was this one moment where I was in the grocery store trying to get all the things as we do.
Yes.
I had had Harper by this time. So I had three of the kids in the cart. And I think truly, you guys, I was on a conference call. Like I'm not
going to believe it.
I'm pretty sure that I was on my little Bluetooth with three kids in Central Market, like trying to load up my freaking cart and cook dinner that night. So, my little schedule was I picked the kids up at 2 and then took them home and did whatever until my husband got home from work at like 5:30 or 6. So anyway, the afternoon I was at the grocery store and it was just, Jackson was feeling all the feels. He was one of those days. He was super overwhelmed, having a major kind of sensory episode. I'm on the phone. He's getting more riled up. So you do what you do. You start buying snacks and opening them to give in the car. Yes. Right? So here I am. He is eating blueberries one at a time. And I've got these other kids. And like, he just starts crying. I'm on this call. And he just, at one point, throws the blueberries.
Oh.
Like a giant, like 3 carton worth of blueberries are now, he's screaming. My other kids are freaking out because he's crying and there's just blueberries rolling everywhere.
Oh, man.
And I just hung up on my call and I start to cry because I'm so overwhelmed. And I'm like, this something has to change. This cannot be my life right now. And blueberries are everywhere. My cart is full. You guys, I just got my kids and left.
Totally.
Yes. I've done that.
Left the cart there.
I did not even have the capacity to like find someone to help. And I'm like the queen of like, you put the cart up exactly where it went. Like I don't love to follow rules, but I want to do the right thing.
Right.
And at that moment I was just beyond and Jackson was having this episode. So anyway, that was one of those moments where I'm like, something has to give because this can't happen again. And also, how can I help Jackson? And that was a moment where I needed to go all in on the fact that I couldn't put him in a situation like that again, where it was so sensory overwhelming for him. But I also know that like I'm going to have to go to the grocery store with Jackson. And how can that work? And so I went the next day, told the school what happened, and he just... Anytime we ever went to the store, he would freak out.
Okay.
It was just too much. And so she said, okay, Micah, here's what I want you to do. I want you to pick a store, go to the same store at the same time, and buy this one thing. Park on the same row, buy one thing, and do that for a couple months. I'm like, what? That's like the most inefficient possible thing I can do with my time. The grocery store with the kids and parking it. So I did it for 5 months.
Wow.
Every single Monday, I picked up the kids. I drove to Central Market. I parked on the same row. I would just loop until I could get a spot, parked on the same row. I did the exact same thing. I put them in the cart. I went straight to the salmon counter. I pulled my little number. I got 1 pound of salmon. And then I checked the heck out. that was all I did for like 3 or 4 months. And slowly Jackson was okay. He started to be like, okay, you know, and I would add in some milk. Like, I wonder if you noticed, I just added milk into the cart, right? Like, yeah. It got to the routine of going into the store and checking out. And he built up an expectation of how it was going to be able to work. And so I think that there are little things like that, that, man, I created systems for sanity. I like had a hashtag Sam Monday for forever. Before there was a hashtag, it would have been, wasn't a thing. And like, years ago. I had to build in tiny little systems to create wins for him and for the rest of my kids and for me. And so we literally eat salmon on Mondays because we are now, that's like what happens.
I love that.
Little stuff like that.
Finding those systems and sharing them, super helpful. I want to talk about a little bit about May Design. And we've been talking this season about owning your influence. And something that I think is unique about where you're at is that you have this company that you are so invested in that has nothing to do with the Down syndrome community, yet you're also super invested in the Down syndrome community. And we've talked to people who have had a child with Down syndrome and then felt the need to start a business that is centered around Down syndrome, which is fine. That's what I do. That's what happened to me in my space. But I know that there's a lot of people who are passionate about Down syndrome, and you're doing both really well. And so I want to talk about some of the things you've done. Like in 2017 with May Design, you released the Lucky Few tumblers and Lucky Few notepads. And then last year you did with Michelle Sullivan, Littlest Warrior, who's on the podcast this season, you did the Advocate Like a Mother tumblers. You are the design genius who came up with the Lucky Few tattoo, which you guys, people tattoo their bodies with Down syndrome
all over.
And not just that, but since it's happened, I've yet to be at a Down syndrome event where the main design aspect is three arrows. I mean, not three arrows.
It's
three arrows.
Yes, totally.
Is it not insane? Completely wild.
I mean, I had a dream. A repetitive dream that had these three arrows in it. Anyway, it's crazy how it worked. And
yes, so it's amazing. But all this to say, talk to us a little bit. How do you see your role as successful business owner bleed into your space as an influencer in the Down syndrome community?
So it originally happened, again, it was that same season where we just come off of Good Morning America, and Jackson had started at the Rise School of Houston. And when I walked in first to the school, there was this beautiful mural that kids with Down syndrome had painted. And it just took my breath away. And it was this beautiful image. And I think too, some of my fears as a designer or a creative, it's again, those potential expectations of what our kids can do, right? What is Jackson's future life going to be? And so I can imagine all these wonderful things that I hope that he can do and believe that he can do one day. And so I think seeing this mural, it was led by an adult with Down syndrome and had kind of like progressed into having all these kids participate in it. And it just blew my mind away. So I had walked in and said, if I put this on a book and people want to buy it, I'll give you all the proceeds, right? Is that a thing that I could do? And again, I just kind of made it up, and I got the high-res scan and put it on a notebook, and people started loving that notebook. And so then from there, I think just from that one book for about a year, we made $10,000, and I was not May Designs. Like, I wrote the check for the proceeds for $10,000. So I was blown away by the support for people that love Jackson and were willing to just buy a book because the proceeds went back to the Rise School. And so we then kind of took that model and like, let's do that again. And so we crafted an event that was just geared towards all kinds of different, it was an OT activity. We basically worked it into the school to create an entire sensory and OT activity for the kids, where they had sponges and all kinds of different materials to make something beautiful. And so out of those actual pieces of artwork, we scanned them in and made a new collection. So we've done that a couple of different times using spray paint paint, like little, you know, or squirt bottles where they're having to do, where they're, we made them hard, right? We're like, they're having to really squeeze with that fingers, which is all the things that we know as mamas are like actually critical, right? The kids that don't love a sponge or the kids that just want to use their hands. Like there was no wrong way to make art. And so I think kind of combining those worlds of imagination and creativity with fine motor skills was this like amazing trifecta for me. And so to be able to even just, of course, give back monetarily to organizations, but then it's progressed. You know, we were able to help with the May Designs, give back and provide a scholarship for Ruby's Rainbow. And so that was super fun. And Anna, who was a recipient, was able to be featured on Good Morning America,
which was cool.
So I think that those are the moments where I just, when, you know, anytime I feel out of form, it's like, what's your greatest accomplishment at May Designs? It's like, the fact that we've been able to give thousands of dollars to help spread awareness for Down syndrome and help with early childhood intervention and provide grants for kids to go to like college, that is something I never even dreamed would happen from a tiny little notebook company, and is my greatest work.
Oh, that's amazing, Micah.
So when we're talking about making an impact on a large scale, I'm wondering if you can encourage our listeners who want to make an impact as well, but are most likely doing it on a smaller scale. How do you take advocacy into the workplace and into your kids' schools and into your communities? What's your encouragement for those listeners?
I think you can only start small. The second you try to make something big, I feel like you're starting out with the wrong motive. You know, I was hopeful to sell 10 of those little books at the, you know, with the mural on them. And so I think that people are watching us. They're watching us interact with our kids, and they're watching how we respond to social situations. And so I think walking around with your head held high and being so proud to shout the worth of our kids in every capacity, whether it's walking into an art meeting or the way that you're handling birthday parties and invitations and all of those little tiny things and advocating for our kiddos, it feels sometimes like we're on display and we don't want to be. I don't know if you guys feel like,
yes,
but it's like this like extra pressure. Like, well, how are you going to handle X situation? Like, it just feels like there's extra eyeballs. And so I think that for me, living with integrity, it's like the things you do when no one's watching, but it's the same thing for advocating, right? I'm not doing anything different in my private life that I'm not doing in a public setting. And so I think starting small, and constantly fighting. I don't know if this is answering your question, but, and then there's tons of practical things, right? Of just showing up at school, going to lunch, all those little things. And then trying to really, I mean, I am a huge believer that you are your child's best advocate in terms of knowing like exactly what they need in that moment. Yeah. There are so many different philosophies for therapy, and I mean we could have 12 more podcasts, which 100%. Is what you are doing the differences in therapy. And I think that's probably one of my more difficult challenges, is really just knowing, and I'm trusting the experts to tell me,
right?
And that sometimes the balance between me being Jackson's expert and the experts being the expert at like the masses, that to me is probably the greatest challenge, is knowing what the things that I know deep down about Jackson versus the paperwork that says you should do X, Y, and Z. And so I think that, again, those little things of advocating to say, you know what, I'm sure that the paper says this, or I'm sure that the books say that, but I know what he needs and it's X. And just running hard after that. And then if you're wrong, you can tweak it. Like, life is all about pivots, right? I've made 100 million changes in my business to pivot what the world is needing. And I'm going to make 100 million pivots about Jackson and the therapies that he is needing now, what he can and can't take. And I think that that's our role, is fighting for our kiddos every step of the way, all of our kiddos, and what they're needing in the moment. And you being in tune with that, I think is our greatest work as mamas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that goes back to what we were talking about earlier with having, like, there's that, we have to have open hands about the future, but at the same time, we have to pursue with everything we have what we think our kids need. Mm-hmm. And it's such a hard balance but it's so wise too. It's like such a beautiful way to go into the world.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Kristen Enriquez, she was actually on season 2, episodes 1 and 2. But she always says to me, what does your gut say? Like when I'm trying to figure it out. And I think that we cannot underestimate our gut as moms for our kids. And yes, the experts have their things, but like, but what does your gut say? Because you know your kid better than anybody else. Micah, thank you for sharing all of that. And I love your perspective on that it is even just by knowing your kid well, you're stepping into a sense of advocacy, and that you don't have to be doing everything all the time, and you don't have to be the own a business and do all Down syndrome. Like they bleed into one another, and that's what we're doing to step into our space of shifting the narrative and doing our job, shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. So thank you so much for sharing all that. And we're going to step into a space in our podcast that we love called Good News. And we'd love for you to stick around. Are you willing to stick around? Tell us some of your good news.
Okay. I'm not leaving this party early.
No way, girl.
Until the end.
Okay. So then we're going to be right back in just a minute with the sweetest moment of this and every episode of the Lucky Few podcast, Good News. All right, friends, I'm so excited to talk a little bit more about Jonas Paul Eyewear for kids. So Mason started wearing glasses years ago, and we searched and searched for an at-home try-on kit with cute glasses. I mean, girlfriend is super stylish, so she needed some really stylish glasses. And I was so excited when we happened upon Jonas Paul Eyewear for kids. They have these incredible kits that they send home, and they're try-on kits, and it's totally free. They'll send these kits home, and the kids get to try on all the different frames, wear them around the house, risk-free, see which ones you love, and then when you decide on a pair, you send them all back, let them know what pair you want, and you buy an incredibly affordable and adorable pair of glasses without having to leave your house. Here's another thing I love about Jonas Paul Eyewear. So Mason has Down syndrome, as all of you know, and it's hard to find glasses that stay on her face. Jonas Paul has this really great aspect about their eyewear, and it's an adjustable tip. So not everybody realizes this about their glasses, but every time I see someone who is going crazy over Macy's glasses, which is basically everywhere we go, I take them off and I show them the adjustable tip, because it has been a game changer for us with Macy getting to wear adorable glasses, and we can adjust the tip majorly so that they fit her really well. And I know for a fact that if you have a child who needs glasses, there is not a better company out there. So as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, you're going to go visit jonaspauleyewear.com. Use promo code theluckyfew to get 15% off your first order. And trust me, you are going to thank us. All right, friends, we are back, and it is time for our favorite, most exciting moment of every episode. Micah Boyette, how are you bringing us in on this one?
Good news.
Whoa. It's about range.
Down and higher. Yeah, that's what they call it. That's what they call a range.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Micah May, we would love if you could share some good news that you have with Jackson.
Good news.
You did. You sang it.
You did it.
Okay, so the other day I was taking Jackson to another eval. We're switching some speech stuff around, and was in the height of stress. It was work. It was crazy. It wasn't that I wasn't looking forward to it. It was like a thing to do. And so I went to school, he rounded the corner, and he lit up like I had never seen him light up. And he just started running towards me in the hall. Like all of his third grade class was there. Right. And it was like, mama. And he just got to me, I knelt down, I gave him this big hug, and he threw his little lunchbox over his shoulder, and he just trotted on outside, because if I go to lunch with him, we go outside on the picnic tables. And I went outside and just said, again, this is routine. Like, he does not like a change in his routine. And so I'm like, we're not going to go to the picnic tables, buddy, but do you want to get out of here? And he just goes, yeah. And I said, do you want to go to Chick-fil-A, buddy? And he was like, yes. And then he just started going, lemonade, chicken, french fries. He was listing off all the stuff that he was going to get. And he just grabbed my hand and started walking to the car. And you guys, I started bawling. Mm-hmm. I think it was just one of those moments where he needs me. He's needing me right now. Needing time with me. He's needing one-on-one time with me. And he's needing some additional therapy. And so like that beautiful little window of carving out some space that I'm able to go pick him up. So we're starting this new routine once a week. So it's going to be like Tuesdays or Wednesdays with Jax. And I cannot wait to just see how it goes with him. And so my good news is I get to spend like a good several hours with him a couple times a week, taking him on little French fry dates and to some therapy, which is kind of a radical thing because we're picking up him up early from school. And I can't wait.
Yes.
That's so sweet. That. Mike and May, we can't thank you enough for being here today, for being the advocate and the shouter of worth that you are, and for bringing so much whimsy and beauty into our lives. To all our listeners, remember that you can follow Micah at Micah May and May Designs on Instagram.
And you can also hop over to May Designs at maydesigns.com and order all the things for graduation and Mother's Day. And make your celebrations this May amazing.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That? Stop it. Stop it already. All right. As always, a big thank you to our editor and producer, Andy Lara, and to our intern, Valerie Schleider, and our sponsor, and all of you who have shared the Lucky Few podcast with friends and have listened faithfully and cheered us on. We cannot thank you guys enough. So please don't forget to subscribe. Head on over as soon as you're done listening. Head on over and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember that you, dear listener out there loving your kid, you are a shouter of worth and a narrative shifter. So keep on keeping on. We are cheering for you. And we will see you next Monday on the Lucky Few podcast.
Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Lucky Few podcast. Review our show on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Check out our new home at anchor.fm/theluckyfewpod, where you can support the show for as little as 99 cents a month. Visit Anchor or our website, www.theluckyfewpodcast.com, to begin supporting us today. Follow us on all social media at The Lucky Few Pod. Tell us about your good news by leaving us a voicemail or text at 424-442-9147. Our show is edited and produced by Andy Lara at andylikeswords.com. See you next time, and thanks for listening.